This is the San Diego Hot Stove Podcast.
That's a hot one.
From the Padres Radio Network.
Shipley deals. Hunter hits one deep. Car rushed. Here he goes again. Lower deck, left field. Ball going, ball gone. Hunter Renfroe, three home run day. Welcome back, kid. Good to see you. Fun to watch you.
Here is Rich Herrera.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Padres Hot Stove Show as we count down to get you ready for spring training, although we come to you with kind of a heavy heart today, learning of the passing of Dick Enberg. And I wanted to bring on Mike Pomerantz to talk about that and Padres and everything Mike's been off to during the offseason, but primarily talking about Dick Enberg getting a chance to work with him, and he's joining us here on the show. How are you?
Well, Rich, thanks very much for having me on, and I wish it were under better circumstances.
You know, I when the news came through on Twitter, and I think I saw Dennis Lynn tweeted first. I'm like, no, this can't be right. We just saw him at Petco Park a couple months ago. This is wrong.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the same reaction, you know, we all had. I'd seen him a couple of times briefly in the off season. He'd been doing a lot of traveling, and you know, he's got three grandkids and family going in and out, and he seemed so busy, and he was busy doing some things himself with podcasts. And, you know, the guy's always had such amazing energy. I thought the same thing. In fact, I double and triple checked with people without getting, too offensively close to his family and privacy right away, just to confirm it. And when I did, I was as shocked and surprised and saddened as I think everybody else was.
I wanted to get your thoughts and get you to share your memories of Dick Enberg, getting a chance to work closely with him. And there's a great video that's gone viral of you and Sweeney and Mudd giving him his final send-off, his final game behind the mic for the Padres.
Well, I've got to tell you, it was an extraordinary experience for those of your listeners who've been with us for a while. You know, when I came over in 2012, when Fox picked up the contract to carry the Padres, Dick had already been there, Mark Grant. So Mark Sweeney and I started, and, you're getting an opportunity to work with a legend. And I've had a very fortunate career, and I've worked with some extremely talented people and some big name folks. And then you get a chance to work with a Dick Enberg, and you just don't know what to expect. And I've got to tell you, he is going to be with me for life. I mean, it's just the way it worked between us. He was so gracious and so warm and so thoughtful. A million stories come to mind every time I think of him, but I can tell you in 2012, we traveled with the team doing the pre and post game show, unlike what we do now when we do the shows from studios when the team's on the road. So Dick and I shared a row on the plane. Every flight, we had the same row together. And I called him Mr. Enberg for about 2 months, despite, you know, him constantly telling me, you've got to start calling me by my first name. I said, I can't get past it. I don't know if it's a reverence thing I had or what, but it took me months to start calling him Dick instead of Mr. Enberg. And I can tell you the kind of guy he was. Obviously, I think your listeners know this is a man of extraordinary talent and genius. And there are few on this planet who do what we do for a living, who can even speak in the same atmosphere as he did. But he would be in the seat ahead of me. I'd come down the aisle, go to sit down in my chair. He'd already have our usual, which was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on wheat, handwritten in half that he would tear. He'd hand me half. And seconds later, the flight attendant would come by. She'd hand me the beer and he would have a Chardonnay. And I'd always laugh. And I'd say that right there tells you, while we have some commonalities, there is a difference in elegance between Mike Pomerantz and Dick Enberg, and no more, I think, graphically illustrated than the fact that I'm holding a beer and a PB&J, and he's got it with a Chardonnay. And just look, I'll give you one other quick story if you have a second, and
yeah,
you'll indulge
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely, please.
So 2012, the team is, I believe, playing in Washington, and then we're going to Philadelphia. And that's one of those travel deals where you're busing between D.C. and Philadelphia. Or maybe it was Philadelphia, then D.C. It's not important other than to say we were on a bus. I left some clothing on the bus, didn't have anything, and it was over Mother's Day. And I had said something about that to the guys when we got into the airport. I mean, into the hotel, and I thought, man, it's too late. I'll never get anything. And you know how you like to try to wear pink maybe for Mother's Day. That was what we were doing. And I was fretting about it. And I had other ties. I was going to go with that. Long story short, I get a knock at my door in my hotel probably around 11:30 that night. And I open the door, and there's Dick Enberg standing there with a little gift bag and something in his hand. And he hands me a pocket square and a tie, and they're pink. And he says, here you go, just so you never have to go without pink on Mother's Day. And then he just turned around and walked away. I was like, hey, you want to come in? He's like, no, I'm tired. I got to go to sleep. I just wanted you to have a little something. But that's the kind of thoughtful guy he was. He just covered us all the time. He taught us what he could. And with Dick, it was the kind of deal where he could teach you up and down and have great insight and genius into how to do the job. But at the end of the day, he was working with an extraordinary skill set that the rest of us mortals just didn't have. So I knew what he wanted me to try to do. I just didn't have the talent to execute it. But I'm forever grateful for all that he'd done professionally. And I'm like a lot of people, with a heavy heart this holiday season.
Fox Sports San Diego ran the tribute that you all did to him, after he retired. And I've taped it. I've watched it three times, and every time I walk away with something more from the prep work that he did, his signature, oh my, you know, he paid his dues to get to where he was, and he had a career that just went boom straight through the roof. But my gosh, did he make the most of every little thing that came his way?
Oh, this guy had a work ethic unlike anyone I've seen in the business. Now, as I mentioned before, I've seen some really talented people, and all of them very hardworking. You don't get to that level professionally in anybody's craft, right, if you're not really willing to commit yourself and work hard. But this is a guy who, by the time he was working with the Padres, had more than made his bones in the business and could have, in essence, mailed it in, taken a one-sheet approach, and done a game really off the cuff. Had he chosen to, and I don't think anybody would have complained a bit. But this is a guy who would spend hours, and I literally mean hours, before every game, prepping, reading the other team, the out-of-town newspaper, prepping the details, talking to players, talking to coaches, talking with scouts, down on the field with us, down in the clubhouse, tireless. I mean, if you ever thought of taking a day off, you sure better not do it around Dick Enberg. He'd never say anything, but he'd never have to, because the way he worked just drove everybody. And I like to think, the guys who I've worked with and the gals as well, we'd all say the same thing. I think he made us exponentially better individually because of that work ethic, and as a collective. While we may not reach the benchmark that a fan may expect of us, I can honestly tell you it was never for lack of trying. And I think Dick led the charge with that. I've never seen anybody prepare for anything the way he did, ever.
It's amazing. And really, isn't that the key to greatness, that they make everybody around them better?
I think so. Yeah, we've heard that said about players, you know, Michael Jordan and the like, you know, where they make everybody around them better. And I agree with you. I think that is, and it was the way he did it, too, that made you feel special and included, not threatened, like you better do this or else. It was more he had such a love and a passion for baseball or whatever sport he was covering. It was infectious. We talk about a game all the time. He always wanted your opinion on things before, you know, offering his own. He made you feel like your opinion mattered. He made you feel like you mattered. And I believe he made fans feel that way. In my mind, there are very few broadcasters of sport who have the latitude, because sometimes games don't allow that time, but to have a true connection, like a personal connection with the fans. Most sports, basketball, sports with clocks, move so quickly, the broadcaster is just kind of the traffic cop and the go-between. You don't really feel like you know the broadcaster. Obviously, baseball is such a much more personal sport, and the time lends itself to that. That Dick had that ability to make you feel as though you kind of knew him. And Dick didn't really care much if you, he wanted you to like him, but he wanted you to feel as though you were informed, that you were entertained, and that you felt connected to the team. And I think he was as fine a broadcaster as I certainly can say that I have ever worked with, for sure. And that I've ever seen, because I've never seen anybody with the versatility in a resume that he had.
Basketball, baseball, football. I mean, as a little kid growing up, you probably watched him call the Minnesota Vikings and Fran Tarkenton scrambling around. I remember watching
soundtrack of your life, right?
Exactly. And now you're going, I'm sitting with this guy that I was a little kid, and that was that voice that would come out of that television. This is unreal.
You got to be kidding me. I mean, yeah, and you're talking about the Olympics, Wimbledon, and beyond that, the play-by-play is one thing. The hosting is another. You know, the Sports Challenge talk show.
I love that show.
But beyond that, the essays that he wrote that were his signature for his Wimbledon coverage or the Olympics, he could write more masterly than anyone I've ever seen. And God knows that signature delivery, the cadence, understanding nuance and drama. I mean, all of the ingredients that go into becoming a quintessential broadcaster, a real titan in an industry. He had every one of those ingredients, and then were other broadcasters who were extraordinarily talented, even an Al Michaels or a Keith Jackson, where they couldn't touch him, was in the field of essay writing. He was a writer. This is a guy who won national Emmys as a writer, off-camera stuff, production, in addition to the broadcasting work that he had done. You're talking about 42 NFL seasons. I mean, if this guy was doing NFL seasons before half of your listeners or my viewers were even born.
That's amazing. I mean,
you know, every single game of consequence. He did Houston-UCLA when neither team had lost. He's at UCLA for 9 seasons. They win 8 national championships. He does professional boxing. He calls an Ali fight. Maybe a couple for all I can remember. I mean, if there was an event on this globe, at some point he did it, and probably did it multiple times.
And then to have that talent in San Diego calling the Padre games for so long was a treat. I wanted to ask you something, because you do a lot of different things, and you've had such a storied career. One of these days I want to sit down with you. I want to talk about your coverage of September 11th and all the things that you've done in your career. But today I wanted to talk about Dick Enberg. I think, Mike, tell me what you think of this. He might be the last play-by-play broadcaster to have a signature call that everybody universally respects, because it's natural and it wasn't kitschy. When he said, oh my, that punctuation mark, you knew that there was something exciting happening, even if your brain couldn't process it.
Absolutely. And he, to me, is the last, along with maybe an Al Michaels, maybe you can put Bob Costas is somewhere in the arena. I mean, obviously they're legends at what they do, but I would agree with you on a couple of fronts. Dick came from an era where television wasn't fragmented out with 8 million cable providers, and there were any number of big name men or women to pick from to be your play-by-play voice for a singular event. Whether it was a whole football season, an Olympics, a marquee fight, whatever it was, he was that good that he was their go-to guy. He and maybe 3 or 4 other people on this planet. Not like now, where everything on cable, you know, you've got a play-by-play guy plus for every team, for every sport, at every level, ad nauseum. And he didn't feel ever as though he had to scream his way into your conscience, whereas you'll find more and more play-by-play guys now so over-amped for every little element that in the end is insignificant. He knew when to dial up the emotion. He knew when to bring it down. And that signature phrase that you remember, we all do so fondly, oh my, for your listeners who don't know the history on that, the brief is, it was a family term from his family. If you're from the Midwest, or you've spent time in the Midwest, you know, especially it's from Finnish roots, it's a very common refrain out here in the Midwest. It's, you know, oh my, like, oh dear. Like, you don't really even want to pass judgment on it with a more descriptive adjective. The tendency is to just use the phrase, oh my. So he picked that up from a relative, and it was an aunt, I believe, and started using it periodically because he wanted to emphasize something dramatic, but didn't want to overstate it. Because as Dick and I would always talk about, we throw adjectives on performances now and they don't leave us latitude for growth. Meaning a guy throws 5 innings and gives up 2 runs and punches out 10. And we say he was great. what a great performance. He was unbelievable. Well, if Kershaw goes out the next day and throws 9 and strikes out 15, if your guy was great going 5-2 runs, what does that make Kershaw, right? Mm. Where's your next adjective? So Dick felt like, oh my, and the tone and intonation and anything he would add on that in the way of superlatives would give him the latitude to really tell a great story. And I thought that's where the true separator was. He didn't need to yell for your attention. He was so elegant with words and so articulate and so measured that I believe the phrasing he used carried more impact than screaming and yelling. He would resonate in your heart with phrasing, eloquence, and silence. Rare qualities, I think, in today's day and age.
Wow. I mean, I talked to Bill King, who is a Hall of Fame broadcaster with the Oakland A's, went in this year, and he used Holy Toledo, and he said that he used it because it was an exclamation point. Dick Enberg said it was a way to let people know something exciting happened without running over, because when you talk in superlatives, there's really nowhere else to go, like you said. It just listening to say that, oh my, and standing next to him. So Mike, this season, I saw him around the press box a lot, but I didn't want to go bother him. He's there with some friends. He's there enjoying the ball game. What am I going to walk up? Hey, I'm Rich Herrera. I just wanted to say hi. I just couldn't bring myself to bother him. But
well, you should have. I'll be honest. You should have.
Well, I would see.
He's been more than gracious.
Oh, I know he would have. But I was like, you know, I don't want to go. You know, everybody was up there wanting to shake his hand. But I would watch him, and I was just like a fly on the wall. I would watch him, and when we would go out to cover some things, and he was an MC, and fans would walk up, and he was just so gracious and such a gentleman. And then finally one day, I think you were standing there. I was sitting next to you in the dugout, and he came out, and he introduced himself to me, and I'm like, oh my God, Dick Enberg just said hello and he knows my name and he's heard me before. And I went back to being a 10-year-old kid watching him on NBC. What was it like when fans would walk up and you were with Dick and they wanted just to shake his hand?
Oh, it was stunning, because he never understood how important he was to people. He never really, I think, felt comfortable being the center of attention. He never felt like he ever wanted to take the attention away from the people who, in his mind, he felt deserved it, which is what the fans came to see, being the athletes or the teams themselves. He always felt like he was just a voice, a connection to the fan. He was always very gracious, but I think the humility in him made him a little bit uncomfortable receiving that type of attention. He was extremely gracious. I can honestly say this, never saw him turn anyone away, never saw him anything but gracious. But I think there's a little bit of discomfort when you're not from an era where it's a me, me, me kind of thing. He's not that guy. He's the kind of guy who appreciated that people would compliment his work, but he, I think, was of the mind that he would just prefer to be part of your background, maybe part of your soundtrack, but not the center of attention. Whenever we saw him get, asked for an autograph, we'd always kind of look, because he always had a little sheepish embarrassment type of grin, and we knew what he was thinking. Oh, shucks, really? I mean, you know, okay, sure, is what he was thinking. But he'd come off and as gracious as he could be and sign away. And just there are some people in our business, Rich, who you'd think that – you can see if they had an ego, you're like, oh, well, he is or she is fairly, accomplished. I could see where they'd be a little arrogant right. at times. But he was never that guy. Like, and he could have been, and nobody would have batted an eyelash, but he just wasn't that guy. Wasn't wired that way.
Let me ask you this before we let you go, and I appreciate you spending some time with us on our Hot Stove Show. How did he change your professional life?
Immeasurably. I think he and I came from hardworking parents, and we shared that commonality in work ethic, but he taught me more about how to work than he never had to kick me in the rear end to get me to work. But I think there were things where I think I learned to work smarter, if that can be applied here, learned to apply my energies in more efficient and effective ways, where to turn phrases, where to write. I mean, he knew I was going to go out and try to get the information, prepare my best for the audience, but he taught me how to do it better, how to do it smarter. And while I think anybody listening who is familiar with my work knows I certainly have a ton of room for growth in a lot of areas that stand to be improved. This is a guy who gives me and gave me something every day where I felt like, you know what, today I'm going to try to do this a little better and to do that a little bit better and walk away feeling like I was taking incremental steps toward improving. Because he would always say, look, in his own words of himself, I'm still looking for the perfect broadcast. And he's been chasing it, you know, in his 60 years in the business. Well, I understand what he means by that, as you do. You never quite deliver as perfectly as you hope, because in part because it's live and because you're always working on something. But he taught me so many skill elements to our game: the writing, the delivery, the reading, the ad-libbing, how to interview people better, and how to ask proper questions, and what types of questions to go for, and just a lot of mechanical stuff that I want to bore your listeners with, other than to say, whatever you do for a living as you're listening to this, imagine having somebody in your office who you so respect, admire, and appreciate. And then having that person teach you how they do what they do, whatever it is you do. And that's what it was like for me to work with Dick Enberg.
Wow. I've got goosebumps just thinking about this, and I appreciate you coming on. I was going to ask you Padres questions or what you were doing during the offseason, but I think this conversation right here stands in its own, just talking about the fact that we got to be in the presence of greatness in our business, an icon in American sports, a voice that generations grew up with, and we can go on for an hour with the accolades, but he was San Diego's own Dick Enberg.
Yeah, and I think you wrap it up just as succinctly as that. That's what he was. He wanted to be San Diego's guy. He took great pride in that, though he had a global and national profile. He took great pride in seeing this town and this team in the Padres, or the Chargers when they were here, whomever was here. He took pride in seeing them succeed. He wanted that for the fans in our area. I don't know, to be quite honest with you, that he was ever as appreciated here locally as I believe he deserved to be. But I think now when we reflect, you will notice people's opinions will, I think, begin to become shaped by the fact that there are very few like him. You know, while the Dodgers had Vin Scully, Vin would say the same thing. Vin made his living primarily doing one sport for one team. Yes, Vin had a little more diverse resume than he gives himself credit for, but Mr. Enberg made his entire career around not only versatility, but excellence in versatility. Excellence in versatility is so difficult to achieve, right? We can all be mediocre in a number of things, but right. He was absolutely excellent in virtually everything he touched, from a broadcasting to a teaching perspective. Remember, he was a teacher too before he was a broadcaster, and ironically, while he wasn't paid to teach, he became a teacher while broadcasting to mopes like myself. So we're all forever grateful and appreciative. Again, I'll be happy to talk to you about any number of things anytime you'd like. I'm flattered that you'd even consider my opinion on speaking about Mr. Enberg. I'm very proud to do so, and I'm honored that you'd even ask to have me on.
All right, so that's a deal. We're going to bring you back on. We'll talk about the offseason and the Padres, but I think this just stands alone, our conversation about Dick Enberg. Mike, have a great new year, and I can't wait for us to get together down in Arizona and get ready for baseball.
Thanks, Rich. I'll see you down the road.
All right, take care. Our thanks to Mike Pomerantz from Fox Sports San Diego for joining us on the Hot Stove podcast for today. You know, normally we get a couple guests on, we'll talk about a couple different subjects, but I think right now that's about as good as we can get, just reflecting on the memory of Hall of Fame broadcaster, San Diego's own, San Diego Padres' own Dick Enberg, and reflecting on his life and how fortunate all of us were to have him bring us so many memories of our youth, so many Olympics, Wimbledon, baseball, football. I think we're just lucky and blessed that he came into our lives through television or radio, or if you were lucky enough to get a chance to meet and, like Mike, work with him. So that's going to do it for our podcast for this week. I want to wish everybody a happy new year. We'll be back with you next week as we talk more Padres baseball.
This is the Padres Radio Network. Like and follow us on Facebook.com/Padres Radio. Sign up for our newsletter on PadresRadio.com.